You're listening to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. Last month, we announced our best new restaurants in America, and we invited all the chefs and their crews to come to New York for a big old party. And we took that opportunity to sit down with Genevieve Villamora from Bad Saint, the number two restaurant in America. And then during a little party we threw for the chefs, we invited them to kind of come into a little confessional booth and talk about what it's like to be named one of the best new restaurants in America, their background as chefs, and what the future holds for them. So we will hear from the chefs of Morcia, Buxton Hall, Staple House, and Oberlin. But first, here's Andrew Knowlton and I and Genevieve Villamora. Bad Saint, your restaurant, of which you are a partner with Nick. How do you pronounce Nick's last name?
Pimentel.
Pimentel.
Like pimento cheese, but with a tel at the end instead.
So he's your partner.
Business partner, yes.
But then your chef, Tom Cunanan.
Correct.
Is the chef.
Nice work.
Are all of you guys Filipino?
We are all Filipino. Cool. Even chef is actually the only one that was born in the Philippines. And then Nick and I were both born in the States. And raised here.
So I'm
from Chicago, and Nick was born just outside Baltimore.
So how did you guys get paired up as business partners?
So Nick is a co-owner in this other restaurant that's literally on the same block as Bad Saint called Room 11. And I used to work there. And that's how we became friends, was through Room 11. And then I left and started working at other restaurants, but we stayed in touch. And we all kind of live around there.
Which is where? Exactly.
It's in Columbia Heights, which is a neighborhood in Northwest DC. I think for me, the tone and the energy of the city really seemed to change markedly with the Obamas coming. Because, as we know, our FLOTUS is such a fashionista. And I think she just like upped the awareness of creative things and clothes, and they both love going out, and they've been such great supporters of the restaurant scene in DC, and they have their finger on the pulse of where is the new place to eat, and everyone would just follow them in droves wherever they went. So there was just something exciting about them. I mean, I feel like it was part of the campaign overall, like change and youth and hope. But when they came, I feel like a lot of young people came to town, whether they were coming to work in politics or whether they were coming to do other stuff. And a lot of the young folks who have moved to DC in like the past 5 to 10 years are actually doing creative things.
Have the first couple been to Bad Saint?
No, they have not yet been to Bad Saint.
They've been to Rose's Luxury.
They've been to Rose's Luxury.
Yes, they have been to Rose's
so
Luxury.
So I have a question for you. So the Aaron Silverman, who you know, who owns Rose's Luxury, the chef, he said the only person who's ever skipped a line, not even his mother or father, was Obama and First Lady. Would they get to skip the line at Bad Saint?
Yes.
Yes.
Before we did the podcast, I emailed my man Joe House of the Bill Simmons podcast family, and he's a DC guy, big food guy, and I asked him if he had been to Bad Saint. And he said, no, he hadn't been yet. And he said, haven't been, I'm too old to stand in line. And I haven't figured out how to crack the code via paid line standards, which is the way I've successfully been to Rose's Luxury a bunch of times at exactly the time I want to eat. Bad Saint's been at the top of my list, but you didn't do me any favors with all the publicity y'all just bestowed it. Let's say I get to Bad Saint at 7 p.m. this Friday
it's
night.
It's over. Done.
What do you mean?
Stick a fork in it. It's done.
I can't go?
No.
I mean, literally, if I show up at 7, you're like, no, you're not going to get in at all?
He hasn't been to Bad
Saint.
Wow. What time does the last plate go out of the kitchen? Or what time do you take the last order? How do you decide?
You need to start at the beginning, Rafael.
Yeah.
What time do you open?
Yeah.
We open at 5:30.
And what time does the line start?
Well, I don't know if this is going to encourage people to come, or is it going to be like, I hate this place already and I haven't even seen it.
You'll be fine.
Due to recent developments of the past 3 weeks.
It was busy when I was there the first time.
Lines have been starting quite earlier than we're used to.
So, give me
and by that, I mean 3.
No.
3:30. And the all-time earliest was 2 o'clock.
That's cray.
And we open at 5:30.
Wow. So all right. So, and then how many seats in the restaurant?
24.
Well, that's also
that's
crazy. All right, so 24. And so then the last orders go in at what time? On a Friday night?
We stop seating at 10, and we try to get last orders in by quarter after.
But all the tables are spoken for at what time?
Oh, yeah. Also, recently, we've been full up for the night, like our wait list, mm-hmm. by 6:30 almost every night.
What's the largest table you'll see?
Four.
Holy cow. You guys don't. Man, you need to expand. Norton. All right. So let's talk about the restaurant itself.
It doesn't sound real, does it, when you say
I know.
That
you can't make it up. It's like, what's the most annoying restaurant that you could possibly think of that would just make you want to rip all your hair off?
Norton, let's talk about the restaurant itself. I've worked with you for about 5 or 6 years now. You have not spent a lot of time talking about Filipino cuisine. You've been trying to sell me on how D.C. is an actual real food town right now. So what sort of clicked for you with Bad Saint, and what was your first visit like?
Well, I dabbled in some Filipino food here in New York. There had been some new places. And I grew up in New York kind of going to Cendrillon, which mm-hmm. was a very kind of, I don't know, for a lot of people in New York, that was their first taste.
And, is that one in Soho?
Yeah. Beautiful big space. Was there
I went there a few times before they closed.
Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, that was my introduction. And then I worked with a guy named King who opened up Kuma Inn.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard of this restaurant, Bad Saint. And at the time, I even knew that there was a wait. And I'm used to that in D.C. with Rose's Luxury mm-hmm. and Little Sarah, which is this amazing mm-hmm. Thai place that was on our list.
Yep. Where
one
I used
year.
To work.
He used to work at Little mm-hmm. Sarah. And so I got there. I want to say I got there around 5. And there was one. Mm-hmm. There was a younger woman in line with her dog. And then there was a few other people. And it almost looks abandoned from the outside because they leave the shutters down. And it doesn't look like a real restaurant. Kind of, right?
It's very plain from the outside.
And then all of a sudden, this magical, you know, the clock hits 5:30 and the blinds go up. And then all these smiling people kind of come out and greet you. And then they literally take you back into the room. And it's not just like everybody runs into the door at once. And Genevieve is there.
It's not like getting on a Southwest Airlines
flight. No, this is like old school flying where everyone's just standing patiently. And Genevieve comes out. I call her the most gracious host that I ever met this year. And she just kind of welcomes you almost like into your home. And how many, you know, and then she seats you down. And it's not just leaving you. Then she kind of, I don't know, you didn't hold my hand literally, but she, you know, explains where you are, what you're doing.
Well, question, Genevieve, from whom did you learn that level of hospitality and who convinced you that that's such an important thing?
Well, I think I learned a lot from a lot of people. I would say first off, from a Filipino American perspective, like hosting people is just something that Filipinos love to do. It is just like, you know, if you go to a Filipino's home, they will practically give you the clothes off their back. They'll like feed you from their own plate. They'll like cook obscene amounts of food. And then whatever you can't eat because you've been like stuffed within an inch of your life, they will like put in a to-go container for you to take home.
Yes.
So it's just this, that's what I grew up with. Just this feeling of like boundless generosity.
And then how do you translate that to a working restaurant where...
I think we try to do it in a lot of different ways. I think we try to do it in a way where it feels like it just kind of is all around you. In terms of restaurant-y hospitality, I learned so much from working at Comey and Little Cerro with Johnny Moniz and Ann Marler, just because I feel like their approach to hospitality is also so familial feeling, you know, where maybe you might be having the tasting menu upstairs at Comey, but it does feel like you're at a dinner party and you're being very lovingly tended to.
How do you manage to be hospitable when your guests are being really annoying?
I just try to always be on the guest side, you know, and not see things from my own perspective because that helps me understand where they're coming from better.
Okay, but let's be honest. When is it the most challenging to see it from their side? Like what is a couple of things that really drive you nuts, that really test your patience, but you still manage to be hospitable?
Oh man, Adam.
Come on, give us a couple.
She wants the lines to stay.
I know. Come on, give us two things that drive you crazy.
Okay, I'm going to say this one just because I feel like it's a real thing. Mm. And in the Filipino-American community, it's a very real conversation that's happening all the time. And you can find it in the comments section for the yellow chicken adobo if you really want to see it in action.
Okay.
But I think that one of the things that's really hard for me is when folks who come in, and they're not always Filipino either, are like the authenticity police.
Yes.
And one time I had some folks who you know, as their dishes were coming out, they would make a pronouncement on the level of authenticity of that dish. And they did it like for every single
like in
dish.
In front of you.
Yeah, in front of all of our staff, in front of me. And I think the reason why that is hard for me is because we really just want them to have a good meal and to be very, and like be present in the moment and enjoy the music and maybe chit chat with their neighbor and just be there. And everything that we do is trying to encourage that, you know, like just leave whatever you've brought with you outside and just sit here and like share a meal. And maybe, you know, maybe your neighbor's offering you a sip of their cocktail. Like just have a fun time. That's what we want for people. And I feel like when that is going on, this like the critic that can't get turned off, I feel like it is hard to get through that sometimes.
But you've always said that the food, that the Filipino food that you're doing is not, it is not authentic. It's the three of y'all's interpretation of perhaps some of what you grew up with, but also, you know, not advancing Filipino food, but doing your take on it.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's great about American, especially American food right now, is that it's rooted in sort of authenticity, but it takes it to a new place.
And you said American food, which it's all part of that canon, which is like there's only one place. I mean, I think one place in the world, the United States, where you can get all those various influences, and you can have a place serving Filipino food that is, people are lining up at 2 o'clock. That's pretty cool. You know, that wasn't happening 15 years ago.
I mean, this, you just wouldn't even believe some of the stories I could tell you, which I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you one right now.
Bring it on.
See if you believe it or not. So this couple came down from New Jersey last week. This happened, a husband and wife, and they got in the line, and they were probably, I'm going to say, like 50 plus. And you know, she looked like she could be my auntie, and he was not Filipino. And so they get on the list, and it was probably like 6 o'clock, and the time that I quoted them was 9:30, 9:45.
Does that pain you though?
It does. Yeah. It feels like a million little pins and needles stabbing in my heart.
So it, what did sucks. They say when you told them that?
They were amazing. And you know what they did? They waited in their car outside the restaurant watching videos.
Did you bring them a cocktail?
For real. For real. And then the husband like checked in very nicely a few times. And I was like, oh, it's looking like we're going to be right on target for our estimate. You know, like, God, sucks. And they just were like out there, you know, hanging in their car. So sweet. So finally their seats were ready. And I'm like, tap, tap, tap on the window. And they're like, you know, watching an iPad. And then they're like, oh, okay. So then they come inside. And they were just the loveliest. They ordered a lot of food. They chit-chatted with all of us so much. They were the nicest. And it was there, they drove down for the weekend. So they didn't come just to eat with us, but like they came straight to the restaurant. Like their suitcases were in the trunk.
Wow.
Yeah. Because they wanted us to be their first agenda item of their visit. And so we exchanged emails, and she comes from this part of the Philippines that we have featured a number of dishes from, just because it's sort of a remote part of the country. It's like a historically sort of neglected, marginalized part of the country. And the food there is so cool because the Spanish did not have as much of a foothold there. And so the culture and the food is much more similar to, say, like Malaysia or Indonesia, and some really unique stuff. And that's where she is from. She's emailed us all these recipes from her childhood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then she sent these friends of hers to come join us. And they had dinner with us on maybe Saturday. They drove 9 hours from Buffalo.
No.
Wow.
They did.
Filipino?
Filipinos. They were in the line. They were like some of the first people in line.
Wow.
Couldn't have been nicer.
Milton, what did you eat your first time? What do you remember food-wise that you really liked?
Do you remember what I ate?
I do, because I looked it up the other day.
Well, I started with the yukoy, which is this, we have the recipe for, which is kind of the signature dish now, I would say, or the one that everybody orders. I'm sure Tom hates making it, but it's kind of this huge, well, your version of it is this kind of softball-sized fritter of carrots and sweet potatoes and
cilantro.
And freshwater shrimp, sometimes soft-shell crab.
Sometimes soft-shell crab.
It's your blooming onion.
It's the Filipino awesome blossom.
The awesome blossom.
Someone, a little birdie, told me.
Yes.
And how do you eat that? Do you just like break off chunks of it?
Yeah, it's literally party food.
You gotta.
Dipping sauce?
Just use your
what
hands.
What is the dipping sauce?
It's chili vinegar.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Pretty simple, just straightforward.
You had that by yourself, Nolan?
Yeah.
We were very impressed.
They were impressed. Well, I actually asked them to make like a half portion, which I think he probably doubled it for that reason. But I ate a lot that night. I mean, I had the...
Did you have the banana heart adobo?
I did, yes.
Banana heart is also called the banana blossom. And botanically, it's like the unbloomed flower of a banana plant. And most banana plants only have one. But every once in a while, there will be some weirdo one that has like three or five.
But hard to get. It's not on the menu.
They're hard to
the
get
time.
Fresh, yeah. Especially.
Yeah, where do you get them from?
Magic.
Someone, a couple of them buffalo drives them down.
I can't give away all my secrets.
You just celebrated your year anniversary, mm-hmm. September 3rd. Where did you think you would be a year ago?
Oh gosh, a year ago, we were so desperate to open. It had taken us so long to open for various reasons, you know, like build out things and then utility things. And then things just kept getting pushed back and pushed back. And we were just so like out of our minds, just wanting to like be cooking food for people and be open because we had been working on it for so long. So last year at that time, we were just like, hallelujah.
Did you know the food was going to be good?
We liked it so much, and we always liked Tom's food from the beginning. Like the bitter melon dish, mm-hmm. that was one of the first, when we did a tasting with him, and we only ever did one, when we did a tasting with him, that was one of the dishes that he made us, and I remember loving it so much just from that first time that we tasted it.
Did you think DC would love it?
I didn't know, but we thought, we love it. We are into it. Let's just... We can't do this halfway.
Yeah.
We just thought we have to go all in because everyone's going to be able to tell if we're doing it half-heartedly. Like we have to be super excited about it. It has to be everything that we dreamed and we just have to work really hard.
All right. Before we get to our lightning round, what another question? Where do you eat in DC when you're not working? If you have time to wait in line.
Oh my gosh. My husband makes fun of me because I complain about waiting.
Isn't that ironic?
It's the worst. I tend to like to eat at places that are like, that comfort me in some way, where I know that every time I go, it's going to be as great as the last time I was there. Where I don't have to think or feel nervous, like, okay, I got this one night off a week that I could do this. Like, am I going to be disappointed? Because that's...
Well, get arguing. Names and names. Let's go.
So, Izakaya Seki on V Street.
Okay.
The freshest seafood ever.
Cool.
Such yummy beers and sake. Just everything's so well done.
All right, that's one good one.
I actually go here during the day because when they're open at night, I'm always working. But these friends of ours... Anna Marin and Scott McIntosh own a little place called Meats and Foods, which is all homemade sausage. And they also make this killer chili that's insane.
Where's that?
It is on Florida Avenue in Bloomingdale.
Okay.
And they've invented this delicious thing called a chilito. So they take their fabulous, perfect chili and they put it in a tortilla and make it like a mini burrito. And roll it up with cheese. And I like to have it with pickled jalapenos, which just bumps it up a couple notches and just as if it could get any more perfect. And just all their sausages are good. They just are, the casings are snappy and like they're so juicy. And there's this one that I initially was, you know, on the fence about trying because the name of it is salt and pepper chicken. And it's like, oh, how good is that going to be? It's amazing. Really? Yeah.
Chicken sausage.
Whenever I go, Scott's like, what do you want on it? And I'm like, nothing, because it's perfect already, and I just want to taste it as it is. Like, I don't want sauerkraut on it. I don't want anything else on it, because it's perfect.
All right, lightning round, Nolan. We doing this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to start off with a hard one. Maybe this isn't a hard one.
This is scary.
But you have to answer these one, just real quick answers.
Either or.
How many words?
No, it's an either or. We'll give you either or. You can explain why, whatever. Ready? Michelle or Barack?
Ooh.
Barack.
Wow.
Duh.
You just were going on about how FLOTUS was so cool. Now you're thinking Barack?
I got one.
What do you got?
Nationals or Redskins?
I think we call them the football team of Washington.
Oh, sorry.
I like to call them the Red Pants.
Except when they're wearing white pants at home or on the road.
Nationals.
Wow, Nolan. I don't even know what this is. MoCo or Nova?
MoCo.
Oh, Montgomery County or Northern Virginia. Oh, I thought I know both of those.
Okay.
Which one do you like better?
MoCo.
Okay. Do you live around there or where do you live?
I live closer to there. The signage on the roads is better and there's better food.
Yeah. Is Montgomery Donuts still open? Modo's?
Oh, I don't know that
one. That was the place
one.
Back in the 80s. They made amazing donuts.
They closed back in the 90s.
Modos.
For all your listeners, just do yourselves a favor and don't ever drive in Nova because you'll get lost. The signage is so bad.
My sister lives in Nova.
Yeah, does she get lost all the time?
I don't know. She was in Vienna. I just, whatever. I feel you. With the Beltway and everything, I can't be bothered with the Beltway.
It's terrible.
Oh, I like this one. Nolton wrote this one. Eat at 5:30 or 9:30?
9:30.
Because you're a nighttime person.
I mean, it's more like 1:30, but whatever.
Fried or braised?
Fried.
But you have a lot of both on your menu, don't you? Between
we
like
do. Right now we have
stuff.
This really lovely goat dish that's braised. It's super yummy.
Other than the awesome blossom Philippine style, what else do you have? That's your what's your that's next fried. What's your next
oh,
best
man.
Fried thing?
We have a killer fried chicken right now. You guys really, really like it.
What?
You didn't bring us any either.
No. I know this second one. I don't know the first one. No, I need to get back to DC. Jumbo slice or Ben's chili bowl?
Neither.
Ooh, smackdown. What is jumbo slice?
It's like what you eat when you're drunk on 18th Street in Adams Morgan.
Yeah. I've done that before, just not in a while.
Some dude just grinded up on you in a club and the club kicked you out and you're really hungry. That's what you would eat.
Sounds delicious.
But it's DC, so it's not even that late.
Wait, but is there a late night, like what's the equivalent of that you like? Like is there
ooh, you know what it is?
Yeah, where do you go late night after work?
Copycat Lamb Skewers.
Copycat.
Yeah. Have
you
been
there? Never heard of it. No, never heard
of it. So the guy who owns it, Devin Gong, he used to work at Bar Mini.
Okay.
And he makes amazing, delicious cocktails. And he has this place on 8th Street Northeast, not too far from Makedo. And it's like a big industry place to hang out. Chef was just there last night. And
roll the eyes.
In addition to fantastic cocktails, they have really yummy dumplings, like a really delicious triple delight dumpling and one with pork and chive. But they also have these amazing skewers, like beef cheek and lamb and pork, like
good.
Marinated pork.
So what's late night? Like midnight? 11:30?
Their kitchen is open late for DC.
Okay.
Yeah. Solidly midnight. You could still get a skewer.
You're making me hungry. All right, last question. Butter or olive oil?
Butter.
All right.
That was the quickest.
I know.
Butter makes it better.
All right, Genevieve, thanks for coming by the BA Kitchen.
Oh, I had so much fun.
My first name is William. My middle name is Elliot. My last name is Moss. My restaurant is called Buxton Hall Barbecue in Asheville, North Carolina.
Nathan Hobart, chef de cuisine. Morcia.
My name is Justin Severino. Owner, co-chef of Morcia Restaurant, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
So I am Heidi Sukel, one of the owners of Oberlin Restaurant in Providence, Rhode Island.
And I'm Ben Sukel.
My name is Ryan Smith.
My name is Kara Heidinger.
My name is Jen Heidinger. And we're from Staple House in Atlanta, Georgia. We heard about being on the hot tin when we were sitting at our sweet little banquet there at Staple House in Atlanta. And our local newspaper came and had us on camera. All of a sudden, we're there watching a mini iPad with Andrew Nolton on CBS 46 and realizing that we had made number one in that exact moment and had no idea that it was live. So we're all kind of sitting there struck by the excitement and the awe, and it's super amazing and felt extraordinarily awkward in the moment.
So the day I heard we were on the Hot 10, I was actually still in bed. Ben had left early to do an event that day, and he texted me with the link to the Hot 10. So that is when I found out I was in bed.
We were on a boat going to a dinner that was on a sandbar with some friends of ours that own an oyster farm. And so we were doing that, and it was like 8:00 in the morning or something like that. And actually Fabs texted me that said we were number 7. And so I erupted.
I didn't hear that we were on the Hot 10, but I had a hunch because I saw Andrew Nolton, his two little girls wearing Buxton Hall barbecue t-shirts the night before. And we're like, oh my God.
What was your first kitchen job there, Nate?
I think I was 13. I worked in a Mexican restaurant. It was like my favorite restaurant in the town that I grew up in.
My first kitchen job was at a place called Cafe Sam. I went to work, I sliced loins of veal into thin slices, pounded it out, and then to order, I dusted it in flour and seared it on a flat top.
First kitchen job was a bun loader at Red Robin for me.
My first kitchen job was at Ye Olde College Diner in State College, Pennsylvania, and I washed dishes.
My first kitchen job was at Yogi's in Bloomington, Indiana, when I was in college, and I ran the patio and served a whole lot of beer and sometimes washed dishes.
My first kitchen job, ironically, I was 14 years old in Zionsville, Indiana. There's this little neighborhood place called Prophets. And I used to work in the kitchen helping make sandwiches and serve, quote, homemade soup and scoop ice cream.
My first kitchen job was Chick-fil-A. I worked there for 8 years.
What do you love most about the city you live in, work in? I think it's, I keep saying everyone, but it's like the beach is so nearby. And like, it's so easy to escape a city in that state. And it's only 60 miles tall. So like in 20 minutes, you can be at a beach that's a cliff, and like it's pretty incredible.
We do have collaborations with other Hot 10 chefs. Before the Hot 10 came out, we're pretty good friends with Ryan Smith from the Staple House, being so close, just a couple hours away in Atlanta and Asheville. And he reached out to me and was like, hey, can you cook for our 1 year anniversary party? And I was like, yes.
In Rhode Island, like, I didn't think like something like Bon Appetit would have an impact on the day to day, maybe on something like in long term or something like that. But like 2 days after, like, Bon Appetit was on a Tuesday, and then on Thursday we were open, we closed Tuesday, Wednesdays, and on Thursday we opened and it was insane. And it was just like, that, this is incredible. And it's been insane since.
I love Asheville. I hated it when I first moved there, 2007. I moved there without a car, without a license. Public transportation sucked. I moved there from Philly, and I hated Asheville. But now I've seen it grown, and I've grown with it, and it's such a beautiful place, and it's my home. It's such a... Go, come to Asheville. Please come to Asheville. If you've never been, come to Asheville.
You know, the question is, has anyone had a humorous or surprising response to learning about our restaurant being Hot 10? There was a moment where somebody sent me a text message and said, so I hear you're the best restaurant in the world. And I wrote back and I was like, ha, 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 that's really funny. Bon Appetit. We were just named best new restaurant in the country, 2016. It's really amazing. He was like, no, that's not what I heard. You're the best restaurant in the world. I was like, thank you. We are.
This podcast has been brought to you by Carrie Polis, Emma Wertzman, and Lily Sherman, with editing by Mitra Kaboli. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Gradys. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Plus, we're now offering online cooking classes with Sir La Table that feature our recipes. Sign up at bonappetit.com/cookingclasses and learn how to make everything from pork chops to molten chocolate cake. Thanks for listening.